Just you can do the goblin noise. Been doing this for 50 years and I still find it funny.
As you can see, Paul can speak to it.
Hello, I'm Ben Eagle, and welcome to episode 8 of Meet the Farmers. As you can probably gather from that bit at the beginning, today we're talking turkeys. I went to meet Paul Kelly a couple of weeks ago, marketing genius and turkey guru, who farms a few miles outside of Chelmsford in Essex. Now, this is a great example of a farming family that had a good idea and stuck by what they believed in and achieved great success as a result. His meat has celebrity fans, including Delia, Nigella and Jamie Oliver, and the business continues to thrive, but at heart, this is still a family business with family values. I hope you enjoy listening to Paul as much as I enjoyed meeting him. He's a really great guy with a fantastic attitude towards life.
Well, the business was founded in 1971 by my father, Derek Kelly, and Molly, his wife. Prior to that, Dad was actually, he was in the poultry industry. He started actually life as a cowman, worked in the dairy herd over in Reading. But his degree was in poultry genetics. So then when the chicken industry really started to boom here in the UK in the 50s, he was a geneticist for one of the big companies, then general manager, and then Bernard Matthews asked him to go and work for him. So he worked for Bernard for couple of years and an American company, and then in 1970 this big American breeding company that he was working for went bust, dragging our farm, little farm that we had down here, with it. So he decided to go on his own. So I was 7 years old, so pretty much all I do remember is poultry. And it was hard. We were producing, you know, just standard nice fresh turkeys, but the market was in huge change. Traditionally the butchers sold fresh at Christmas. Supermarkets sold frozen. Back in the 70s and 80s, supermarkets suddenly started to sell lots of fresh turkeys, putting butchers under huge pressure. Butchers were going out of business anyway, so our little business that was producing nice hand-plucked white turkeys was in a marketplace that was going down the pan. And come the early 80s, it was a very sad state of affairs. You know, we weren't bust, but we weren't far off it. You know, the banks wouldn't lend us any more money. So we had to change direction. We had to change direction or go fishing. Do something different. So that's when we went around the country and bought the last remaining flocks of bronze turkeys, about 300 of them, brought them back onto the farm here, kept them as pure lines, but we put them together as well to get a real broad genetic base, and started taking them, just breeding them pure back on weight, and just to produce lots of different families of bronze turkeys. And everyone thought we were crazy, you know, because the reason the bronze turkey disappeared in the 50s was because of the little black feather stub. And there was me going out trying to sell them, and the butchers are saying, "Paul, you idiot, you know, customers don't want bronze turkey, get over it." But in my heart, I knew it was the right thing to do. For the butchers to compete with the supermarkets, they had to do something different. And it was a matter of going back to tradition and doing, and then of course we were free ranging them as well, which, you know, in the industry, we were the laughing stock of the industry at the time. And I have to say, there were several years where I thought, oh my God, have we done the right thing here? Because A, we didn't have any money. You know, you're trying to launch something without any money. You fight at the time, but you know it's the right thing to do. Absolutely, you know it's the right thing to do. For the butchers, us, the whole, you know, it is a no-brainer. But getting it off the ground and convincing people.
So take me through, because I know nothing about turkeys. Take me through the life cycle of a turkey from egg,
okay,
through to cane.
Okay. So the seasons, really. I mean, like every other farm, we're a seasonal business. Just like Arab, just like everything else. Let's start in January. So January really is sitting down, seeing how Christmas went, planning, budgeting, getting all the money in, you know, making sure we're getting our cash flows right. And during, in January, of course, we've got all our breeding stock in the sheds ready to produce the eggs. So we start producing eggs week 11, which is March. That's when the first eggs. So our season is natural season. Because of our slow-grown breeds, we have a natural season. So they come into lay March, eggs go into the incubator, typically beginning of April, and then we'll get the first hatches in May. And then we're producing eggs and hatching chicks right the way through May, June, July and August. We produce about 170,000 eggs a week. So we've got two sides of our business. We've got the hatching and breeding division, and then we've got our Christmas turkey division, meat side. So the breeding division, actually, we supply, of all the fresh turkeys sold in the UK, now about 25% of them come through our hatchery. You know, when I looked at it, I thought, blimey, that's quite impressive, really. For a little old turkey farmer.
What's the size of the industry across the UK? How many turkeys?
There's about 17 million produced all year round, but there's about 4 million fresh at Christmas. And of that 4 million, we produce about a million chicks. So we're producing those chicks right the way through to August. Then in August, the breeding stock will get killed, the ones that have been laying. But of course, what we are from our pedigree lines, from our pure brood lines, we're replacing, replacing day-old chicks in August as well for the following year's breeders.
Do you have a little competition going on with goose producers?
No, I don't. I love goose. It makes you realise what amazing value turkey is.
It's true, especially not at Christmas.
But there it is. But goose is wonderful. But there, and it's goose.
You took the helm of the business over in 2004. Was it business as usual very much for you then? Or did you know that you wanted to make changes?
Over the year, like every family business, my dad and I had huge rows. We shout and scream at each other. But then, an hour later, we'll be talking to each other. It's not, it's one of those things. Because it is difficult. Both of us, I think, we knew where we wanted to be. It's just, how do you get there? Now, that's the discussions in the farming business, right? We all know I agree with that, but we're not going to borrow that much money, and then it all kicks off. It's been frustrating, but then it's been great as well. No, Dad's, he's a great mentor. There's not much he doesn't know.
Is he still hands-on at
all? Oh, yeah. Dad's 86 next month, and he's still... But Mum passed away 7 years ago, and she was really active right up until the end, really. No, Dad's still in the office every day.
Right, so anyone who takes a quick look at your website will see the huge amount of support that you have from famous faces.
Yeah.
Jamie Oliver.
Yeah.
Michelle Rue Jr.
Yeah.
Nigella. And yeah. Delia, of course.
Yeah.
What is the secret to your marketing success? Because that doesn't come easily.
No, it doesn't. I know, and I'm fully aware of that. And what's the secret to it? I can't say one thing, really, honestly. I think it is mixing with movers and shakers. And doing a good job, having a good product and doing a good job. If you'd have a good product and do a good job, you get noticed, and Jamie is passionate about it. Delia's passionate about food, and they want to come out, and of course they do come out, and then when they see the different breeds and they see the fat, and when I'm sitting there talking to them about cooking it and what's different and, the genuine differences between the two, they love that. They're just as enthused about it as we are, and that's the problem a lot of farmers have. If, I'm not saying there's more like me, more with that kind of passion to take it further, I'm sure there'd be an awful lot more of us kind of little niche brands in the market that actually are out there. Because, make no mistake, the likes of, Nigella and Jamie and Jimmy and all of them love to engage. They are hungry for knowledge. And it's really frustrating for them when they want to get much closer to farmers and get into the depths of what's happening. And a lot of the time they get this wall will come up, And I'm not. And I have always said, and I've said it to the industry, if you're not willing to show your customers, the consumer, around your farm and show them everything that you do, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I really honestly doing what my customer wants? And that, to me, is the acid test. And that's it. Whatever we're doing in our business, there's things, in the hatchery. We have to kill male poults because, a lot of the time we have to kill them. Something I really struggle with. Do I hide it? Do I not talk about it? No. Because it is something that we do. Yeah, we have to actually get rid of and dispose of gas some male chicks at times of the year because they're not wanted. Now, unless I'm sharing that with our customers, a solution will never be found.
Yeah.
Because it is a terrible waste. But for as long as they want 5-6 kilo turkeys at Christmas, the males get to be 8 kilos at Christmas. They're not economic enough to put into the commercial market, for meat stripping. So that's one of those things. But then when we go around the free-range farms, I want people to look in the sheds and the buildings and go, That's exactly what I thought it should be. '84, I joined the company, and I could see it then that the customer, the consumer, was totally removed from the farmer because you've got the supermarket in between. Yeah, and the supermarket's saying to the that's great. Yeah, we want it back, we'll pack it like this. We want it cheaper. Consumers buying it. Totally removed. They've got no idea what's going on in the farm. Right? They assume everything's good, right? Everything's fine. Now, as soon as, of course, media start to show a bit of interest in that, I didn't realise that. Chickens grow that fast, I don't know. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the problem is the industry hasn't communicated it over the years, right? And, of course, for a lot of consumers, seeing how modern farming practices really work, they're quite shocked because most of them have a picture of an idyllic little farmyard with a lamb and a sheep and a turkey sitting on some eggs and some chicks. That is most of their idea of a farm. So when they do see farming as it is in the 21st century, they're quite shocked. If there'd been dialogue from day one, maybe it would be very different now, and maybe we wouldn't have all these food scares and all the paranoia.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it is, I mean, there are lots of, like, Twitter is a great example of lots of farmers coming to the fore and building their own communities. But I think there's a difference, isn't there, between us talking to ourselves.
Yes.
And then how to lift that voice outside. Yes. And engage into it, yeah, to, directly to the consumer.
Yeah, yeah. And that's hard. And of course, going through, I mean, the likes of Jamie and all the food, they do that. Mm, and they do it very, very well. But they've got to be careful, you know, because, you know, in their own rights, they've got their own little brand and their image, so they can't be hooked up to something that's going to not seem to be right in the public image, yeah, I mean, in the public eyes. No. And if I look at our company, we could be so much bigger than we are now in terms of the offers, the business that's come over the years. Oh, yeah, do this, do more, do this. And, you know, we could be... I've got contemporaries in the industry that are 10 times the size of our business. I could be there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Could have grown.
That was one of my latest questions, actually. I mean, it says, yeah, it's one of the things that I've always thought, you know, you have such capacity here, and yet, in essence, you're still a hands-on family business.
Because I love it. I remember really reading something Warren Buffett said, that he said a successful business says no a lot of the time. A really successful business says no most of the time. See, so when, you know, and that's true. And for us, we had a lot of opportunity, and I'm so glad, because back in the 80s, honestly, turkeys were booming. You know, and these factories were going up, and people were, and we didn't have any money, and we were plodding on to our own little bronze bit, and these guys were making a load of money. But I knew that's going to be short-lived, because you know what? That is the bottom end of things. But in even the past 10 years, we could have grown our business. Got a bigger factory, stopped to do an awful lot of wet processing, but I don't know, I wouldn't enjoy it. And you know what? I have a wonderful little business. We've started in America now.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you've literally just flown back.
Yeah.
So you have a farm in Virginia.
I have a farm in Virginia, yeah. And we're doing it exactly the same over there we've done here, and it's just brilliant. Except, you know, we've got no brand awareness. It's exactly like we were here when I came in 30 years ago, when I was 22, just going out to sell these bronze turkeys. Just exactly the same, except the difference is now I've got a bit of money and I know what to do, and that makes a huge difference. It's really enjoyable, yeah, now, rather than...
It must be but, quite exciting going back, because you're sort of reliving your experience,
yeah.
But in a better place than you were before.
Yes, because I can go back to the hotel and sleep at night, not worrying about how am I going to pay the fee bills.
But yeah, so who's running out there for you?
We've got a guy, Judd Calvin, his wife Carrie. They've got a share in the business, giving them a share. So we bought the farm and bankrolled it, and of course we've got the majority stake, but we've taken these two, this family on, who are just as passionate about the business as we are, and incredibly hard working, and it's, you know, the potential is enormous.
Yeah. No, it's not all good news, I mean, because you had a pretty major fire, didn't you, back in 2015?
Yeah.
Take me back to that time. And, you know,
Father's Day 2015, June the 21st, it was. I was gardening in the back, just in the greenhouse, and I set smoke, my wife, and looked over at the plant, and there's smoke coming out of the eaves. So I said, call the fire brigade quick. And they got here half an hour later. The fire had got into the fabric of the insulation, and the whole lot went. Every single, and you know what? We just refurbished half of it 18 months before. So we just spent about $160,000 on it 18 months before. So it's with new panels. Oh, it's the whole lot, literally gone. 24,000 square feet, fridge facility and processing facility. So, on June the 22nd, we didn't have a processing plant, and we had all of our turkeys on the field out of the range. And it was quite funny, really. Well, it wasn't funny. You've got to have a sense of humour. It's actually, I did, I was up, my wife has blood pressure, so I'm actually up in bedroom looking at this inferno, and I thought, this is a good time to... this is a good time to check my blood pressure, because I don't get... So I actually did. I strapped this monitor on, and it was 120 over 80, right? It was totally, that's normal. So I've got a doctor friend, I said, you know what's... I said... It's really strange that I took my blood pressure and I was just... It was normal. I said, is that normal? He said, no, Paul, you really do need to go and get checked out.
And yet, you were still ready for Christmas.
Yeah. 19 weeks, one day. And the insurance company... And if you were fantastic, yeah, and if you were absolutely... And if you were brilliant. Came in, and said, you know, they wanted to get a project manager in. And of course, and I don't say there's any of you farmers are very practical. I said, look, honestly, there's no better project manager to get this done than me, because I want to get that done, you know, and you'll bring a guy in who'll just, you know, be all drawings and blah, 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 and have people teams of this. I said, no, we'll just put a steel frame building up, I'll put a concrete floor in, and we'll get the panels in and just get it all lined up. And we had all, you know, the great thing, it makes you realise if you have good relationships with the suppliers that you've worked with for years, and I was phoning people up, you know, like I did all the fridges, Paul, look, what do you need doing? Da, da, da. Yeah, fine, okay, you forget about that, that's done. When do you want it done? September 22nd, you want it in? Fine. Electrician. Da, da, da. Okay, Paul, forget about that now, that will be done. All right? So you go to all these people that you've dealt with for years, and they have all the teams lined up to make it happen. You know, and that's what you get if you have a good working relationship. If you pay people on time, look after them, you know, it comes back and helps you one day. And that's for sure what happened.
Should we go and see them?
Let's go and see them. These are the females. You see, these are the nests. This site here, which is where I live, this is where we've got breeders. This is where we also pluck the turkeys. And these two buildings here are probably, you can see through there, this is exactly the same, are probably the best utilised assets that we have. Because although, you know, I mean, a lot of the challenge with farming, isn't it, is actually utilisation of assets, especially like with the combine harvester and that kind of thing. For us, this building, in January it gets cleaned out after Christmas, and then in February we bring breeders in, yeah, where they're actually reared, and then they start to lay in April, and then in August the breeders will get killed, and then this turkey gets cleaned out and we put some chicks in. We get 20,000 chicks in here. Then the chicks have reared up for 6 weeks, then they're taken out, they're sold off to be free-ranged with some of the bigger guys. Then the farm is completely cleaned out again, and then our Thanksgiving turkeys that we do a few here, they come in and this turns into a lairage. Yeah, so through really from the beginning of October to November, yeah, this is Thanksgiving lairage. And then November it becomes a Christmas lairage. December the 5th, it is totally cleaned out, steam clean. Mobile fridges come in, and this becomes a big coal store on December the 5th. You think? And that's this coal store right up the 23rd of December. Yeah, and then there's a 4 week rest. So in terms of utilisation, this is a pedigree breeding unit, then it broods commercial chicks, and then it's a lairage, and then it's a fridge.
So how many birds have we got in here?
600 per quarter. So these are the females, and you can hear the noise they're making. See, female turkeys don't gobble. All right, so that's a... Oh, 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 oh. The males will do. They make that... Oh, oh, oh. That's them. They're looking at us thinking, who the hell are they? Because they haven't recognised us.
Yeah.
They recognise all the other guys that work here. Yeah. But to us, don't know them before. When you go into a turkey shed, if you hear that noise, you know they're all right. If you go into a turkey shed and it's quiet, not all animals, I guess, if they're quiet, there's something wrong. You know, if it's a deathly hush and they're standing there like that, the birds aren't well. Yeah. You want to hear lots and lots of noise all the time. And that's a lovely noise. And the production, and of course production tells you as well, egg production.
Yeah. You know, obviously, you want to have a healthy turkey 100% of the time. What are common health issues for turkeys?
Respiratory disease is the biggest problem for turkeys. They really are highly sensitive to tracheal infections, lung infections, pastorella, the TRT, the rhinotracheitis, bird flu. If you don't give turkeys lots of fresh air, yeah, and they don't like humidity either, you want to keep the humidity low, yeah, and lots of fresh air going through them. That's the main problem. You know, other than that, they're pretty hardy. They don't like draft so much. They'll stay out of the draft. But respiratory disease is the biggest enemy by a long way.
We're inside now. Obviously, yeah. What have you got in terms of acreage for your birds?
For our wild woodland turkey, we stop at 200 per acre, and then for the turkeys that have got a barn attached to them, it's 500 to an acre. Yeah, that's what we're doing. I mean, we're doing more and more of the wild woodland turkey. You know, we've been free-ranging our turkeys from a barn, and that's kind of fine, lovely work. But I'm flying into Stansted one day, looking out the window, seeing all these little pockets of woodland that are a totally wasted asset.
Yep.
Turkeys love woodland. You know, turkeys originated from Mexico, and they, you know, they go in the glades. They love living in woodland. So I came straight off the plane. I thought, right, that's it. Google, you own Google Maps.
all the so you get Google Maps and you see these little bits of woodland all around the farm. And I think, wow, I didn't even know that was there. I'm out on my horse,
yeah,
going around everything, sneaking through fences. Go on, my land! I'll just have a look. I've got loads of that.
Yeah,
so I've gone just straight around looking at, and now we've got three. You know, we've got three lovely woodlands.
Yeah.
Fenced them off. It's a great way of rearing turkey, and you can do that with that because the Kelly bronze is all natural season, so they hatch spring, as nature intended, spring, early summer. So they go out into the woodland in June, July, so when it's really nice weather. You know, they're getting, so when they're going into autumn and winter, they're fully mature. So they've laid all their meat down, they've laid all the fat down, and they're fully feathered.
Yeah.
They can cope with whatever's thrown at them. If you did it with the standard turkey, you couldn't do that because they're so fast growing. To get popular weights of chrisom, they have to hatch them in September. And so come October, when they're off heat, you can't let 5-6-week-old turkeys into a woodland in October. Because nature won't allow that, because they're not fully feathered, you know, and they're just not adults, they can't cope with what's thrown at them.
What are they eating when they're out in the woodlands, your woodland vets?
Everything. I mean, we do feed them supplementary food, but we've got one... Two of the woodlands we got were orchards that were planted in the early 90s. And the cherry orchards, and they just love soft fruit. And of course, turkeys love nettles, absolutely love.
Yeah,
nettles.
I've seen the videos of you trampling them down.
And... But of course, they're the arch enemy to farming. When I'm saying one of them, look, don't you dare! They want to. Well, I'm going to spray those nettles off. No, you can't have nettles. It's like the Antichrist, you know. This is idiot growing nettles. You know? But you do, and it's great, because you go in there, so the turkeys go in June, they just eat everything. They eat all the nettles, and they just, you know, all the acorns, the blackberries, cherry, the whole lot. They come out in November, you know, we bring them out into here in late November, we bring them into this lairage for about 5-6 days to really clean the feet up, a nice bed of straw to get the feet nice and clean before we kill them. So then the woodland, it's a really hard frost, and they're cold weather in January, kills all the parasites and all the bugs. You know, you just sanitise the land really. Then you get a bit of sun on it in the spring, so that'll sterilise it. All the flora, everything comes back. So when we put the things back into the woodland in June, July, it's all ready. And we stock them at 200 an acre. Whereas if you look at your standard turkeys in a barn, they're about 30,000 an acre. So that puts it in perspective, the difference in stocking densities.
I can hear some males in the background. Can we go and see them?
Yeah. Just you can do the gobbling noise.
How do you even do it?
That's it.
That's great fun.
I've been doing this for 50 years and I still find it funny. I actually have convinced... We had some visitors over 2 weeks ago. I convinced this lighter I was actually talking to them. I'm going...
As you can see, Paul can speak to it.
Sad but true.
Is there any flavour difference between the females and the males? I'm sure you get asked that a lot.
Yeah, no, there isn't. No. I actually saw recently in a, and I'm not going to say who the writer was or what the cookbook was, but it said, when choosing your turkey, look for a hen with a bright eye. Right? Now, how many turkeys do you see on the supermarket shelf that you can see its eye? I just said it to them. I said, "Oh yeah, that was a bit of a faux pas." No, the reason it all came, you know, getting a hen bird or getting a young hen, wasn't it? Because if you do go back in history, back in the 1700s, when turkeys were walked to the London markets, right, they'd be walked, they'd hatch natural season, then they'd walk them through over the stubble fields, June, July, get them to the London market. If they didn't sell them, they'd walk them home again. Now, once the turkey goes beyond 29 weeks. Now, that's when it's reached its full maturity, and that's when the meat will actually start to get tougher. So that's, you know, we get a young hen, that all goes back from actually what we're talking about 400 years ago. There was a chance you might get a hen that had gone over the year and you're eating hen from the previous year's hatch. Right, that doesn't happen anymore. All the turkeys that are actually grown out, they're killed and plucked and processed at Christmas, and if they're not used, then they will be frozen down.
Some whites here.
Yep.
Got some bronze.
So you see the bronze there, you see the bronze feather there. That every single turkey in the world originally was bronze and came from Mexico.
right? And then it came over, went up, obviously it migrated, the wild turkeys migrated up from Americas, came over with the Spanish in the 1500s, and then it came, first record in the UK was in 1500s, 1535 I think it was, all bronze. And it was King Henry VIII had the Hampton Court. That's, he was the one that introduced it, replaced the peacock in the royal courts.
Okay.
That was a more trendy, fashionable bird with more flavour. Then everything was bronze. Then in the 1950s, basically an albino turkey in the US hatched. Oh, that's cool. So they backbred these white turkeys.
Yeah.
Right? White, white, white. And so the white feather came up. And literally within 5 or 6 years, bronze turkey went out of fashion and the modern white turkey came along. Yeah. And then most of the genetic development now for the big, faster-growing breeds has been done on the white turkey. I'm very privileged to be in a business that is doing well, making money, and I love it. And I do wake up every morning and I think, this is, and pinch myself.
You're going to wake up soon.
I've got a lovely wife and great family and a lovely lifestyle and a lovely...
It's so nice going along, so you genuinely just, you just really love what you do.
Yeah, I do, and I do. And I think what's really great, and I think, because in the 80s we had some horrible times. Horrible times where we didn't have any money and we were doing something we didn't really know was going to work. If I'd have known back in 85, 86, 87, if we'd have known that we would be where we are now, it would have made it so much easier. But then I wouldn't have wanted that, because what I do know now is, because where we have got what we've got and achieved what we've done, you appreciate every single last little lovely bit of that, because you know how awful it can be. So, when it's nice, you really do. And I think that's true. Yeah. No, I do. I say that to my kids. So, you know, you've got to actually go through a bit of pain and suffering to appreciate it when it's good.
Well, I think I probably know the answer to this, but you are you're optimistic about the future.
Yes, I am. We have our challenges. Like every business, we have our challenges. Right? And it's not all absolute, can't go wrong. Of course, disease is the biggest single threat. That could wipe us out. We do have people snapping our feet. Every time we do something, people copy us, and then they'll try and do it a bit cheaper, and it's really, really hard to stay ahead of the pack. You know, there are optimists and pessimists, right? And there's nothing wrong with either of them, right? It's just the way you think. The reality is, though, the optimist will have a much nicer life. It's so true. You know, you can talk yourself out of anything. Some of the things I've done in the past, you know, if you don't have a go and try and see, you never know. And it's easy to talk yourself out of doing something. Yeah.
We've got a new British agricultural policy on the cards in the next few years. If you could make a difference in shaping this policy, what would you do?
That was Labour, without any shadow of a doubt for us. No. If we do go back to 1990, 91, 92, the only thing that was stopping our business going forward was getting our seasonal labour. We need labour in April, May, June, July and August for the breeding and hatching season, and then we need labour in late November, December. Right? And we need 110 people to come in and help us. And without the Polish team that we have come in, and they've been coming back, I mean, they're part of the family. So they come back and help us every year. If we risk losing that, I would be making decisions now to scale the business right back. Absolutely. But I do, you know, take comfort in the fact that we're not the only ones. There's 2.7 million seasonal labourers come into the country. Now, how are you going to fill that hole? With Brexit, if we didn't get that seasonal labour, the hotel business would be down the pan, restaurant trade would be down the pan, agriculture would be boom, you know, gone. So I think they are listening, because if they didn't come, we come to a grinding halt. They're the engine. They're the engine of the country. And anyone who thinks otherwise is disillusioned.
Well, I think we'll probably leave it there.
Yeah, no. Happy Christmas. We could say Happy Christmas.
That's good. Must be in your
Happy
mind.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
Actually, before we do go, how do people find out more about Kelly Bronze?
Kellybronze.com. You know, and that will tell you everything you need to know about the business.